you look at democracy from the top and you see corrupt politicians who don't do their jobs very well. But if you look at democracy from the bottom up, what you see is lots of heroic people struggling to make it better, to make it function better, using the legal system to combat child trafficking, using the weapon of a hunger strike to try and force change, going into devoting their lives in villages to promoting the Right to Information Act. So these people who really are affecting change from the bottom up do create this huge pressure for Indian democracy to function better. This is one of the most important things that has to happen in India. It's no longer enough for democracy to make a nation, to forge a nation. It also has to deliver better governance. And I think that's the hopeful thing that we're seeing now, is that voters are chucking out people who don't govern well, and they're voting back into power people who govern better.
And your book covers quite a few aspects of democracy in India, from the very big picture political aspects down to the individuals through the country. And you've had a unique look at both. Let's start a little bit with your chapter on dynastic politics and how it's stifling Indian democracy.
There's a lot that's wrong with Indian democracy. And I think the dynastic nature of politics is one of the big things which doesn't work well. The Congress Party has turned into a party which is very sycophantic towards the Nehru-Gandhi family. They've basically controlled the party since independence. They've run India for more than half of the years since independence. But it's become the only glue that keeps the party together. But what's happening there is that that culture of sycophancy, that culture of dynasty, is really stifling the party now. And what it was personified in Rahul Gandhi, who's the next heir, the next generation, who really doesn't have a natural feel for politics. He's been thrust into politics because he's the next generation, has to take over. And he really failed to ignite the imagination of the voters during the last election. And I think you saw then what dynastic politics really isn't bringing to the Congress Party, the disadvantages of dynastic politics. But it's not just the Congress Party. I mean, many other parties in India are the same way. They're not democratic internally.
10 years ago, when you arrived in India, the mood of the country was very upbeat, and there was a lot of promise for the future. Things changed, though, during the tenure of Manmohan Singh. What happened?
I think that it's a very good question. I think that the euphoria, if you like, in 2004 when I arrived was overdone. India really felt it had arrived on the world stage. It was a superpower in the making. As journalists, we weren't really encouraged to report about poverty. We were encouraged to report about shopping malls and gleaming new India and IT centers and call centers and so on and so forth. What happened really was that India sat on its laurels. The government of Manmohan Singh didn't introduce economic reforms. It didn't do the sort of things it needed to do to unleash the energy of the private sector. And more particularly, it fell into very corrupt ways. And we saw the mood really punctured by two things. One was a huge corruption scandal centered around the allocation of telecoms, mobile phones, licenses. And the second was the Commonwealth Games. Beijing had staged its Olympics, and it had been a huge success and a huge advertisement for the power and the might of China. And Delhi staged the Commonwealth Games, contests for former countries that used to be part of the British Empire. It was actually a bit of a national embarrassment for India. People were coming up to me and really pessimistic about the future of India. And I felt then, and you know, that pessimism was as overdone, actually, as the optimism had been in 2004. Because there is a lot of positive force for change that was bubbling up during that 10 years.
It led to a natural backlash in the most recent elections and Narendra Modi coming into power, plus the combination of the fact that social media played a huge role in this election, whereas when you first covered the elections in 2004, we really didn't have as vibrant a social media in India as we do now.
Yeah, in fact, the media and the social media have played really key roles from 2004 to 2014. The growth of 24-hour media in many, many different languages, in all the languages of India, really putting politicians right there in people's living rooms and in people's villages. The middle class really realized that they needed politicians to govern. They needed politicians to ensure law and order. They needed politicians to deliver infrastructure so that they could do business. Twitter and Facebook and 24-hour media really brought that home and really got the middle class engaged once more in the political process.
Well, as much as you write about the big picture of democracy in India, you also touch on individuals in your book. And certainly Indians, along with the technology, were empowered with the Right to Information Act.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the most used Right to Information Act anywhere in the world, something like 7 million requests filed every year, and it's growing year by year. That's given the poor a much greater voice. Because in the past, the bureaucrats who ran things didn't have to answer to the people. They just answered to their bosses. And the Right to Information Act gave ordinary people the ability to question decisions and brought a level of transparency and accountability into the bureaucracy that bureaucrats had to answer to the people. And that's a massive change because, in fact, bureaucrats felt they were the lords of the village or the town or the district, and they didn't have to take into account what people really wanted. They could make arbitrary decisions, and those decisions would stand. The Right to Information really gave the poor in India a voice. They have a voice through elections, but another voice, another way of exercising their power and their rights. And that's fundamentally very important in a society where caste is still important, where people are still supposed to touch the feet of their elders or bow their heads to their superiors. This gave people the chance to raise their heads and ask difficult questions. And I think that in any democracy, that's a good thing.